Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course. That's the name of the show. The other name is Off Topic.
But this is football.
His name was Jeremy. He was on WordPress with a passion for youth sports and some free time on his hands. That SB Nation, they came a-calling. Despite trying to perfect his art, he knew something wasn't right. Then Chris came writing on and started poking fun. They decided to start a podcast, and who could ask for more at the Mountain? Mountain West Connection. Just be sure you don't ever skip this section here at the Mountain. Mountain West Connection. Recaps and previews, such stats, and just random at the Mountain.
Welcome back to the latest Mountain West Connection show. Join us at MWCConnection.com, MWCConnection on Twitter. I really need to record the beginning so I don't say it every time. Facebook, Mountain West Connection.
Wait. You don't like repeating yourself every single time?
No, and if this was radio, I'd be repeating myself every 10 seconds about resetting of, you're listening to this show on this station with this guest. And then I ask my question. And then by the time we come back, I reset who we're talking to, what station, and my guest.
With this sponsor.
Yeah, oh, yeah, sponsor. Sorry, yeah, I forgot. Sponsors, that's key. Which we don't have yet, so thanks. Well, whoever. I don't know who I'm thanking, but it's just a sarcastic thanks.
Sponsor us yet?
What was that?
It's a thanks whoever has not sponsored us yet. Okay, anyway.
Bowl week is here.
Yay, bowls!
We have, I'm assuming these will be in order. I will make sure these are in order because the Hawaii Bowl, well, we've done so many podcasts. This is the bowl week, first weekend of the bowl season. This show, we'll be discussing the Poinsettia Bowl. No, that was...
You're right. The Poinsettia Bowl in San Diego was yesterday. It'll be coming out after this show.
Yum.
Yeah. He's bringing up. So basically, what we're going to be talking about today is the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, and we're also going to be talking about
Vegas, baby.
Vegas Bowl. Both of these are fantastic.
They should be. Yeah, we got the
Evan Buttervich discussing all that, and then Tim Reardon from UBBowlRun.com. Yes, there is a Mac blog on the network, more than one, more than hustlebelt.com. So that's always good. Is there any news? Because news is kind of light, because teams are kind of practicing now. There's a little bit of injury news about USC we get into to the interview about some running back stuff. Craig Bohl won Coach of the Year in the FCS level. You're not surprised? Nobody should be surprised.
I'm not surprised by this. The guy's won. He's on his way to win his third straight national title.
Undefeated this year.
Undefeated. And really, he's all around like an awesome coach.
He is. There's a little bit of news over the weekend with that where they thought he's bringing the entire staff, but they promoted the D coordinator within. And one interesting note on that, they said the Nevada defensive coordinator who coached with Craig Bohl at North Dakota State could possibly be a player or a coach that he wants, because it would make sense to have a guy coach with them instead of bringing in a guy, say, at a Big Ten coordinator or defensive line coach, somebody who's been at the FBS level where he has not. So that could be something to watch. But that's about the only news we have this week on the football side.
Yeah, nothing too much. I mean, we've got basketball stuff to talk about. I mean, Boise State kind of lost against St. Mary's. Another close game. You lost against a WCC team that you probably should have beaten, who happened to be defeated. San Diego State, New Mexico, looking good. Utah State, they lost one of their top scorers for the year.
Not for the year, the top scorer.
Top scorer.
Jared Shaw, center, or power forward / center, suspended indefinitely for a violation of team rules, which were obviously undisclosed.
See, we totally had some news to talk about.
We did, and if that goes through, I looked at they have a stretch of games in January and February where they play like at Boise, I got to read, like Boise State, New Mexico, San Diego State, UNLV, and at Wyoming. That'll be exciting. Much tougher than the WAC and Big West back in the day. So with that, there's no other football news. We will get right to our interviews. Our first, these will go back to back, so I'm not going to go in a reset because I'm lazy and I got other stuff to do. So the first interview will be Evan Buttervich from ConquestChronicles.com, USC stuff. Then the second will be, like I said, Tim Reardon from UBBullRun.com. discussing the Buffalo Bulls versus San Diego State. So enjoy, everybody. All right, and now we welcome in our USC expert. We'll go with expert there. It's always the great word. Great word to use. Evan Buttervich over at ConquestChronicles.com. Fairly new to our SB Nation, what, 3 months or so, hanging out with us, doing some stuff?
Seems like it. I mean, pretty early to be an expert, but I do appreciate the compliment.
Well, I've seen your stuff over at FanSided before, and during the Hawaii game, helped me get some other insight, so it's always good to get going.
Oh, of course, yeah. Fun season, I'll tell you that. Fun season.
Up and down season, to be safe to say. And, well, we got Chris here. Chris, you can say hello if you want, since you haven't said anything yet.
Yeah, sorry, my call dropped, and I had to get back in.
Oh, okay, I did not realize that. So, how about Chris? You start off with your favorite coaching question toward the USC Trojans.
Why? Why not just sign on Orgeron as a head coach for an extension, you know, for that extra $6 million instead of investing in Sarkisian?
Well, the thing is, there was a great record. You look at the wins, the Stanford win, beating Oregon State on the road. Those are impressive victories. I think the big problem was not only the UCLA game, because that was a big turning point, of course, but just the fact that you project this out and try to see it play out for the next 5-6 years, like those big contracts are. It's just hard to see that much momentum carry forward for that long. Now, is it great that he did well in the short term? He did fantastic. He filled the Lane Kiffin hole, which was gaping and sucking out the life of the program. So he brought back energy to USC, which is great. The only problem was he that head coach material, or was he just that substitute teacher with the positive mentality?
Now, would have been great to have out. Brought treats.
Yeah, it would have been great to have him on staff, but it's just really hard to say, okay, now after, you know, 8 weeks, 9 weeks, now you can run this program.
Who did you want then?
You know, I was actually a Chris Peterson fan, to be honest. I know he didn't necessarily agree with Pat Hayden about, you know, coaching in L.A. and the big lights in the big city. But I think the way he transformed that Boise State program was impressive. And that would have been nice to have as like the staple for the program here.
So I've heard different things. Was it Peter? Because we heard Peterson withdrew, or was it the not meeting eye to eye with Pat Hayden about what Peterson wanted to do?
It's interesting because we know they met. And obviously it's a lot of he said, she said kind of stuff. But, you know, if I were to just look at it from what USC stands for and what Peterson stands for, I think that Chris wanted something different. He wanted to obviously go to the Pac-12 because he went to Washington, but maybe not have – because there's a lot of media pressure here in L.A. And it swallowed up Kiffin. I mean, Orgeron lived it up and, you know, ate it for breakfast. But, you know, Kiffin just couldn't do it. And maybe Peterson wants to be obviously in a big conference but not have that same pressure that comes with USC.
Yeah, and I just to go along with that, I think you're absolutely right. And I think the L.A. media here in general would not have been Peterson's cup of tea just because. But let's go ahead and talk about, for this bowl game, you have an interim head coach because Sarkisian won't be in the offices yet. Orgeron's resigned. Who is this guy? What's he planning on doing for this bowl game?
You know, it's funny because Helton's now the second interim coach this year, so it's nothing new for these guys. Clay, he's kind of had a funny story. Last season, he didn't even call plays. Kiffin was calling all the plays, and Helton was just sitting on the sidelines as the quarterback's coach and kind of the offensive assistant. And then when Kiffin left, he got all the play-calling duties. So the offense, it didn't change that much, but what it did is it gave Buck Allen some more chances. It spread the ball out with less bubble screens and more passes down the field to stretch the defense. So Helton now, you know, has the play calling. Now he's running the team. I guess you'd say he's the head coach, but more or less he's just going to manage the situation and then get them through Vegas before Sarkisian steps in the next week.
So what role is Sarkisian going to have? Is he doing anything with the team, or is he just kind of recruiting during this time?
Yeah, they actually just signed four recruits in the last couple of days. One of them was an offensive lineman from Loyola just today on that being Monday. But overall, Sarkisian's kind of just – he's watched a couple practices. But more or less, yeah, he's just walking around trying to get these recruits because, as we know, the dead period kicks in, so you can't really talk to kids for the next month or so. So he wanted in the last week just to get as many kids as he can out there and just start reaching out to the L.A. Recruits.
So is Clay Helton is he staying on staff afterwards as the offensive coordinator? Is that the plan?
You know, it's interesting because Sarkisian wants to call plays. And, you know, with Helton there, he's kind of taken that backseat role before to Kiffin. Now, kind of the rumors are out there that Helton won't be coming back because Sarkisian's bringing down Nansen and a couple other guys from Washington who have some experience with him. Now, can Helton kind of earn his way in by having these players support him and doing well in the bowl game possibly? But I guess as of right now, he wouldn't be coming back as an offensive coordinator, maybe as a quarterback's coach, but not as a coordinator.
Yeah. Okay. So now we're talking about, you know, and that's a great transition into this offense in general and as offensive coordinators. So for this bowl game, what do we expect out of this offense? Because I've been to a couple of USC games this year, and I saw that it was more – well, it was, of course, that was with Kiffin coaching. It was run
– sorry you had to see that, by the way.
No problem. It was more run-heavy and kind of more lenient on the defense, stopping things than anything. Is that still the plan?
You know, I would say so just because of the way this running back core has worked this year. I mean, Silas Fred, who was leading rusher last year, is not even playing right now. And you guys like, you know, Trey Madden to start the year. And then Justin Davis had a little bit of a run. And now Buck's kind of taking over the reins. But I think USC's got enough confidence in their guys to run the ball. The big issue is that there's only 7 healthy offensive linemen for this bowl game. So, you know, you got one guy going down. And next thing you know, you're on a tight rotation. One of the kids is a walk-on, so they're not going to – or a redshirt, pardon me. So they're not going to play him, which really leaves you with, like, 6 guys in the rotation. So they're going to have to, you know, hold on for dear life. I know that kind of – didn't it happen to Fresno against San Jose State? They lost a couple of their linemen, and then they had to rotate some guys in, which kind of hurt their offense a little bit.
Tight ends.
Ah, oh, those tight ends.
That's what they're there for. So, okay, so then switching from the offense to the defense, so give us kind of an overview of how this defense plays. I know a lot about Leonard Williams, but what about the rest of the defensive line and the linebacker core and the secondary?
Well, you're absolutely right. It does start with Leonard up there, and you look at the outside, Devon Kennard's a senior, and then George Uko is a junior, but those are two stout defensive players, And USC, before the Arizona State game, where they got totally gashed in Tempe, were like the top 5 defense against the run. They've been sacks. And now they've kind of picked up the pace at the end of the season. Best statistical defense to Stanford in the Pac-12. So they're right up there with 1-2 with them. And what they do is they stop the run. They limit teams' rushing games. And then you have linebackers up the middle. Hayes Pillard, who's a stud linebacker, lead the team in tackles. And it's kind of funny because they've only been playing 12, 13 guys the last few weeks. Just a short rotation. Everybody staying in the field the whole time. So maybe some depth would help them, but they have some strong guys up the middle. And then you look in the secondary, Sua Cravens, I think, is the guy to watch. He's a freshman, one freshman All-American. He's just a fantastic young player from Vista Marietta High School. He's going to be a great player in a few years. And then Josh Shaw is a physical cornerback. But other than that, there's just not much depth in the secondary. So you lose those two guys, and you're praying that little, you know, fifth-year seniors like Torin Harris can contribute. And USC fans know well enough that he has had his fair share of struggles.
Yeah, and I think with that weakness at secondary, obviously that's kind of the kind of thing that Derek Carr is going to be attacking, especially with Devontae Adams and Isaiah Burse. Is there any way the USC defense to slow those guys down? Are you just going to have to rush the middle as quickly as you possibly can to get to Derek Carr?
Well, you know, it's funny because we had the same concerns going into the Oregon State game, because I believe that Mannion was the top passer at the time, and USC slowed him down. Now, you know, 300 yards is slowing down is conservative speaking, but able to hold him off those averages of 450, 500 yards and just slow down that combination with Cooks. Now, I think Carr is a better passer than Mannion is, so it's going to be a little bit tougher to stop him because he throws guys open, which is important, obviously. But, you know, if USC can find a way just to play a little bit more, I don't want to say zone, because I think Carr can pick apart the zone. But if they can play aggressive man-to-man and allow their pass rush to get there, that's probably their best chance of slowing down Carr. Because other than that, you know he's going to get 300 yards, even if he has a bad game. Go ahead.
No, you finish up that.
I was just going to say it's all about managing and making sure that he doesn't throw a 60-yard bomb over the top, because that's where they can be beat, is the deep throw down the sideline.
Are there any defensive backs? So we saw the Utah State game, and there's this little we joked about in a show the other day. Like, this guy's like 5'0", basically shut down Devontae Adams. Is there any shutdown corner that USC might have to go up against him? Do you trust anybody to do that?
You know, it's like the lesser of evils, really. But I guess the guy who really stands out to me is Josh Shaw. He's a a physical. He used to play at Florida, and he transferred over 2 years ago. But a very aggressive, converted safety. He's like 6'3", 230, you know, just physical guy. Now Adams is quick, so it might be tougher for him. But if anybody's big enough to maybe shove him off the line for those first 5-10 yards, I think Shaw's the guy who could possibly give him a run for his money.
You're still up there.
Yes, I know. Sorry, I was thinking a question. I had to step away for a moment. That's why I wasn't talking. I'm like, so what have you guys been thinking? What should I discuss that you have not discussed yet? Because I had to put you on mute to take a phone call. But and we keep rolling. We never stop. That's the thing. If we screw up, it just keeps on going. And we don't care. People listen because we know we go random this year. But I assume you guys with the Fresno offense. Okay, let me go to this because I don't know how much Chris talked about. We saw the Utah State game, which was USC, and that was more of a – they kind of limited Chucky Keaton pretty well. Would that be, like you already said, a similar game plan, just attack and attack from different angles and make Karn comfortable?
I mean, yes, but I think Keaton presents different problems. You know, with Chucky, such an explosive athlete out of the pocket. Now, I know Carr has some mobility, but he wants to throw. You know, he's like the way Aaron Rodgers scrambles, he scrambles to throw deep down the field. I don't think he scrambles to pick up 20 yards. So if you're USC, it's all about playing that backyard style of football and just sticking with the receiver, because I know that Fresno State has some good athletes on the outside. And the last thing you want to see is, you know, Carr evade some pressure and then just throw it 50 yards down the field for a touchdown. So, you know, if you're USC, it's just about trying to get him to throw within 4 or 5 seconds and not allow him enough time to dissect the defense.
Yeah. Okay. I've got one more question here.
Fire away.
This is okay. So this is kind of something that's interesting, and it's kind of been bugging me because Fresno State has played USC twice in the past. Once being in the Vegas Bowl, the other one was the 2004 game where Reggie Bush basically saved USC's hide. But outside of that, it seems that USC fans, they don't like playing Fresno State for whatever reason. If there's some bad blood there, or if there's, you know, maybe some sort of competition, Central California versus Southern California, what is going on? Why would USC fans, the fans, not the team in particular, be really against playing Fresno State?
You know, it's interesting because we're going to see it to start the year again coming up in August when they tee it up. So, I do remember that first meeting that Bush played really well. There was some anxiety in the crowd, and there were a lot of Fresno fans that came out to that game. I think that upsets people because much like the way the UCLA, the Notre Dames of the world have, you know, supportive fan bases, Fresno State, you could argue, is one of the most passionate fan bases in California. So I think that kind of riles up people. And then maybe the Central California thing, I also think it's that Southern California elitist. And I know I'm a current USC student, so I see it all the time. There is that feeling that, you know, we're the best team in town, which kind of extends out to the whole state. But I think what Fresno also presents is the fact that they're better right now. And USC feels a little bit not threatened by Fresno per se, but just threatened in their own stature in the state. And any team that kind of rises up as a competitor is viewed as like the enemy. Whereas, you know, if Fresno plays well, it doesn't really affect USC in terms of national reputation.
Okay, that's a good diplomatic answer there. Good from both sides. So what's going to happen? Who's going to win on Saturday, or what do you kind of feel the game, how it's going to play out?
Yeah, you know, once again, it's all going to come down to can these cornerbacks do anything in coverage. I would expect Fresno to come out with some energy, and I wouldn't be surprised if USC comes out a bit flat to start the game. You look at the Sun Bowl as a classic example. That team didn't want to be there. All indications are the players want to play this game, but you just never know. I mean, they're in Vegas. They got showgirls showing up to practice. They got, you know, gift bags with tablets and all that stuff. Who knows where their focus level is right now with the new coach coming in. Now, I know Fresno's pissed because after losing that one to San Jose State, having the BCS game right there, they're going to come out firing. So I would expect them just to throw the ball down the field every possession. If I were to predict a winner, I'd say USC can get their act together and pull out a, you know, 35-31 type game. By no means, USC's defense is better, but even against a team like Fresno, there's just no way to like eliminate their offense. They're going to score some points. So I guess down the stretch, you know, USC maybe gets that one stop they need. And I would expect Marquise Lee to play well, though. I think this is a game where he's kind of been quiet for most of the season, but you know, I'm not a big fan of Fresno's defense. I've seen a little bit of it
this
year.
Nobody is.
So, you
they
know.
They do rush the quarterback well. That, they do get that pretty well. They got that.
Yeah, that kind of scares me because, you know, as I was mentioning, USC has six linemen, just no depth. But, you know, if Kessler gets any bit of time, I think, you know, Lee and Aguilar can have really big games, which would just help balance the offense a little bit.
All right, man. We got to run off. We got to get another interview on going on. So, again, that was Evan Brudovich from ConquestChronicles.com, and everybody check out his stuff for Las Vegas Bowl coverage this week. So thanks for joining us, man.
Viva Las Vegas. Thanks, guys.
And now we're joined by Tim Reardon from UBBullRun.com. Everything on the Buffalo Bulls as we – hey, it's the Potato Bowl with the Bowl logo with chives.
The famous Idaho Potato Bowl.
Sorry, I should get it right. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. We're going to rapid fire this because I don't know how to work a clock this evening. So, Buffalo going to the bowl game. Isn't this? They've only been to a couple bowl games ever, correct?
This will be their second. They've had three invites. This will be their second accepted bowl.
Okay. Wasn't there? They turned something down a few years ago. Is that right?
58. They turned down.
Oh, 58.
Yeah,
a few years
they turned down the bowl because one of the cities in Florida wouldn't let their African American players play, so
okay.
They didn't go.
I remember that now. I for some reason I thought that was recent. I remember probably reading that recently about that.
It was a big theme in 2008 because it had been exactly 50 years to the date. So that's why, you know, that was a big thing that year.
All right, so let's get to the players and game and everything. Everybody knows Khalil Mack is.
Yep.
Amazing. And a lot of people saying they want to see Adam Williams versus Khalil Mack. What does he kind of do? Why? How is he so good? What does he do to make just be that good on a team where typically out of high school you're probably not going to be that good going in?
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing about Khalil Mack is he didn't start playing football until really late in high school. He had an unrelated knee injury in another sport, so he didn't exactly get a lot of looks. So the only offers he had well into his senior was from Liberty. Buffalo hired away one of Liberty's coaches, and he said, hey, you're going to want this guy. Mack is just a workhorse. I mean, he's just a physical specimen, and he is just an amazingly disciplined, hard worker. So that level, along with having Lou Tepper and before him, William Inge, UB's had some really good linebacking coaches. It just really helped him to get to the point where he's easily one of the top three linebackers in the country.
Yeah, and, I mean, Mack is just a complete powerhouse when it comes to defense. But what about the rest of the defense? Because this is what Buffalo seems to pride itself on.
Well, this Buffalo defense, Khalil Mack does his job in occupying two and three guys. I can't imagine what his numbers would be if he were playing on a team like in Alabama where you had to worry about someone on the other side as well. But the rest of the defense has made that work for them. Adam Redden has played the drop linebacker spot. You know, people keep calling UB a 3-3-5. We're really a lot closer to a 3-4 than a 3-3-5. And Adam Redden will sometimes drop back and make that a 3-3-5, or Khalil Mack will go up and make it a 4-3. The defense right now is schemed around knowing that you're going to have to put two guys on Khalil Mack or he's going to make your life miserable. We have Colby Way on the other side of the defensive line, and he's a very good pass rusher, very heady, very good with his hands. And then Adam Redden is just a very flexible back.
So I'm looking at Mack's stats. It's not like he just gets the quarterback, tackles for losses, sacks. He has six pass broken PBUs, whatever. I'll go the short route. Five forced fumbles, six QB hurries. How do teams, I assume they're doubling or tripling team, how does he still get past all that?
You know, I hate to simplify, he's just that good. You can't really triple team a guy all game. You know, eventually the rest of the defense is going to beat you up. And those few plays where you're not triple teaming him, he will make you pay. You know, one of the great things he did against Miami in the game where he set the NCAA record for fumbles was, you saw the quarterback got up in the pocket past him, and he ran that quarterback down the field. You know, he just he never stops coming.
All right, so what's kind of one last thing with the defense. What are they kind of – what's their overall game plan? Because San Diego State has Quinn Kaler, who's came about himself after he took over early in the season from the debacle that was I forget the guy's name, Adam Dingwall. It took me a second to recall it since he was so terrible. Adam Wema, they have Donnell Pumphrey, a pretty good freshman running the ball. What's kind of their game of attack to slow down, or what do they want to stop from San Diego State on their offense?
Well, they've had a lot of success when they've been able to slow the receivers down just enough to let the pass rush do its job. UB is vulnerable to the long pass. Bowling Green, that's how Bowling Green beat us in what was the MAC East Championship game. A few long passes that they happen to get snuck by the defense. So, you know, you're going to look for UB's corners to play you tight. When we're playing well, we play tight. And then just the pass rush and collapse the center to slow everything down up the middle.
Okay. So then let's go ahead and switch to the other side of the ball here. Who's on this offense? How is this Buffalo offense going to take control and really win the game for the Bulls?
When Brandon Oliver runs the ball 25 times a day and he's had a game and he's having success, we're going to win. He's the staple of the offense. He is the guy who's going to set the tone. Our quarterback is a sophomore. He's very smart, very heady. Reminds me in a lot of ways of what I've read regarding San Diego's quarterback. He doesn't have a cannon for an arm, and he's not going to, you know, break off 50-yard runs. Just a very smart game manager, doesn't make a lot of mistakes, and lets the high power skill position guys on the offense do the damage.
So is this a traditional, just like everybody calls the Maction team, where they'll put up all points? Are they capable of doing that?
Capable, yes, but that's not been the way they've worked. The way Buffalo's won their games, they have one is they use the defense to keep the game close in the first half. They use Brandon Oliver to kind of wear teams down and shift the field position. And then you see kind of an explosion late in the second quarter and in the third quarters where UB has really, really come alive. Even in the game we lost to Bowling Green, we were up at halftime, and it looked like we were just starting to wear them down. But the Falcons made some adjustments and slowed Oliver down to come out of the game in the second half.
I see. Yeah, I see. It put up just about 31 points per game, which is just only middle of the pack at the MAC conference there. So heading into this game, I'm assuming there's going to be some sort of a weather advantage since Buffalo plays in Buffalo, and they're going to Boise, which is could be same weather, right?
It's warmer in Boise right now.
Ooh, nice.
Predicted weather right now is a high of 36, and it's supposed to be 30% chance of snow/slush.
Bring it on.
As we call it that in Buffalo, early October.
Nice. And with that long travel, because who knows if weather's going to be a big of an issue for San Diego State and those guys, but what's kind of like the travel? Like, I know you put some there. I guess they have a pretty big basketball game versus at Manhattan on that same day. Are people kind of going to be going to the game really? That's a long trip for a bowl game.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how well it's going to be attended by Buffalo. It's not just the length of the trip. It's also, like you said, the timing with a basketball game in Manhattan that fans have been looking forward to all year. UB's second largest alumni base and the ones with the most money to travel are in New York City. So they've had their tickets now for months for this game. It's also the short time. You know, you have a week to plan for this game, which is halfway across the country. In a city that's very expensive to fly into.
Yeah, I doubt you can get a nonstop from Buffalo to Boise.
About $1,000.
Yeah, it's probably cheaper to do that than go to the Hawaii Bowl from Boise fans, just about, or pretty comparable. So who are kind of like some, well, kind of, I know you got to go quick, so kind of rapid fire the last little bit. Who are kind of some surprise players who, are, like we already discussed Mac, and we kind of discussed some offensive players. Who's kind of like a player or somebody key that could make a big difference for this game?
Well, Fred Lee is our second receiver, and he's really come along as the season has progressed. Early in the year, it was basically all Alex Newts. It was run Oliver, pass Newts, and that was it. Lee's gotten a lot more effective and made himself a bigger part of the passing game. And Joe Licata needs a second and third option. It's, you know, you get against good teams, and San Diego is a good team. They just happen to like to play teams tight for some reason.
Even the bad ones.
Even the bad ones. Yeah, I mean, you look at every San Diego game, from Fresno straight down to Hawaii, they play everyone tight. And so, no, I think they're just a good team. I don't know if it's a coaching issue or if it's just a motivation issue, but for some reason they just can't seem to put their foot on anyone's throat and be done with it. But yeah, UB is going to need a second receiving option and kind of maybe use the short passes to start setting up the run. Because once Oliver gets into you for a quarter and a half or two quarters, things really start opening up.
All right, so this is kind of a wacky question, and this is kind of what I like to do. The famous Idaho Potato Bowl has a week of events that the team is going to be undergoing. They're going to have the bowling competition tomorrow, which is strikes for spuds. They're going to have a field trip, an indoor go-kart racing.
Awesome.
Wednesday night. They're going to have a fancy dinner Thursday night, and then they're going to go visit kids in the hospital and local hospitals on Friday. And then they're going to be doing the MASH Bash, which is on the Basque Block on Friday night before Saturday's bowl game. At the MASH Bash, who is the player who you think is going to kind of probably get out control and really get into the event and possibly make a fool of himself?
In a good way, of course.
I don't want to name a name, but I'm guessing it's going to be one of our offensive linemen. Our offensive linemen are a really funny bunch of guys, and if anyone is likely to go just that extra mile, it's going to be them.
Because they want the attention. They get no attention pretty much unless you're going to be a top five pick. Good answer, offensive lineman. We'll watch out. Maybe I think they post video or stuff like that from that event, so we'll look for that. But last thing, what's your kind of outcome of the game?
I always pick 24-21 in favor of Buffalo.
Simple enough.
And picking against picking against San Diego, who always seems to be within a field goal of winning or losing, that's a pretty safe pick this time around.
And you should all that is safe picks. It's probably a common score, but we have a. Chris likes his favorite San Diego State kicker because you should be expecting very few fourth down field goal attempts or punts on this game.
Yeah, I noticed that. I noticed how few field goals you guys actually attempt this year as I was looking over the game.
Yeah, Seamus, he's not very good.
Kicker Seamus cannot kick a field goal to save his life.
And we'll end with that. Yeah, they haven't attempted forever, so look out for that. So keep that defense ready on the field for those fourth downs. But well, thank you again, Tim Reardon, for joining us. Check the stuff out at ubbullrun.com. He's doing much more coverage than we are, so thank you for emailing that stuff. I'm putting it up in our hub. So check all that stuff for the Idaho Potato Bowl this Saturday. And thanks again for hanging out with us tonight, man.
All right, guys. Have a nice night.
Excellent, excellent stuff there from Evan and Tim there from USC, ConquestChronicles.com and ubbullrun.com. Double interview show today, and we are quick. This show could be one of our shorter shows despite having two interviews.
Shorter shows. It could be like our shortest show that we've ever done.
Together, yes.
Since you and I have started doing the podcast together, not when you and Jacob were doing it together.
Sure. Well, we had a time limit on that issue. But this is probably going to be a little bit longer than my Aaron Taylor interview, but that's about it. That is for a reason because he's a big shot and has 10 minutes to talk to anybody, especially me, us lovely guys. But
our bloggers aren't.
Aren't what?
Aren't important, aren't big shots.
Hey, I got an interview, so I can say we are. And I can claim our website is the top 20% in page views out of all the college sites. That's a big deal, right?
I guess.
Really? That's all you got? That's all the enthusiasm you can muster up for that?
All I got. Exactly.
Whatever. But, let's give our predictions for the game. We didn't do that during the interview. So, USC Fresno State. The big thing I took from that was they only have six offensive linemen. That's going to be an issue.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge issue, and that's kind of why I made the joke about tight ends, because it feels like that's what Stanford always does. And use one of your enemy's strengths, it could become your strength,
They might have to.
Enemy's closer.
Yeah, they may have to do that to have a tight end play left right tackle every now and then just to give a guy a breather if somebody gets hurt. But I'm wondering how, because we know Fresno State's defense isn't good, but we saw how many sacks they put up against Utah State, and Utah State is an All-American candidate, or technically an All-American by USA Today and Tyler Larson, and they still got to Daryl Garrettson, I think was it 4 or 5 sacks in the title game. So isn't Kessler the starting quarterback, if I'm correct on that? Yeah, Cody Kessler. They will go after him, and I think there could be multiple sacks in this game and could cause him to have to chuck it to Marquise Lee.
Yeah, and that's pretty much USC's biggest hope.
Hope.
Hey, honestly, I think Fresno State's going to take this pretty handily.
I do too. For some reason, I think it will, or they will, just because, like you said, you mentioned to me a lot in our last show or the title game recap. Derek Carr didn't have a good game, but he still threw for 400 yards and 3 interceptions. That was a bad game for him.
Yeah, and considering that USC's secondary hasn't really been strong, I have a hard time seeing USC pull the upset.
Do you know the line in this game, though?
I want to say it was like USC by 3.
No, 6.5.
Really?
I may, if I can sneak away for a couple hours, make the 90-minute drive to the state line and do a parlay including that game. Or just do that game, man. 6.5 for USC.
Make a couple of calls to some friends here.
I could do that, too. I don't know. This town's tiny. It's on the border, so. It's basically the parking lot. You're in Utah. The other side is Nevada.
Yeah.
That's one of those things. But that... Dude, worst case, USC's or Fresno's going to cover. But I think this could be like a double-digit win. Just because the coaching change, people like the coach over there and everything, and then they got Clay Helton, who's probably going to do a good job because he was calling the offensive plays, but another third coach in the same season, not a good proposition for a win.
Yeah.
Now, the other game, Buffalo versus San Diego State, this is actually a pick'em, exactly a pick'em. Nobody has an edge either way. Do you think that's accurate?
If I say my prediction tonight, do I have to say it, go with the same exact prediction tomorrow night when I'm on UB Bulletin's podcast?
Their video show? I would say no. You can choose whatever you want. You can say San Diego State by 50 here and say over there it's going to be a close game coming down to Seamus, your favorite Irish kicker.
I'm going to go ahead to say that San Diego State's going to win this, and it will come down to a field.
I think it's going to be – I agree. It's going to be close because
– I actually like his 24-21 prediction.
Every game 24. Because that's probably the most common score. I mean, it's pretty likely.
Between both of these teams.
For any team. And plus, the thing about San Diego State, like we all said, everybody was in agreement, they played to the level of their competition. Like I said, whether it's Hawaii or Fresno State or Boise State with that win, actually, they – play whoever's lines up against them, they match up. And Buffalo has, I think Buffalo could pull this out because they have a good enough defense to slow down Adam Wema, Donald Pumphrey, and whatever Quinn Cale is going to do throwing the ball. I think they have a good enough defense to slow that down. And we've seen if the Aztecs get stuffed on offense, the game's pretty much over.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the weather is going to really have a pretty big impact in this game. And San Diego State has not had the experience in cold weather this season. Like last season, it was cold when they played Boise in Boise. But you're not going to be facing weather. You're not going to be facing actual weather. Like when that game was last year, it was sunny and cold.
Yeah, this game there's possibly a chance of rain or snow or mix. And that. Obviously, it doesn't matter if you're playing the cold or not. It's going to be tough for both sides, but I'm assuming Buffalo is more used to that than San Diego State.
And I think San Diego State's going to pull this out, but if weather plays into a factor, I think Buffalo could easily win this as well.
Yeah, I'm looking right here at CBSSports.com. Everybody has Buffalo except for Jeremy Fowler has San Diego State winning the game. 5-1 for Buffalo. I could see with the defense, but we'll have to wait till Saturday to see with the I love the bowl scheduling again. Triple header for the Mountain West games, all smushed together, overlapping. Thanks, guys. So that's I think that's this does recap. This previews. Geez, I'm so out of it with so many different games. Emails I'm getting about. Hey, help me do this. Help me do that. But this is our bowl preview. We will have. Are we gonna do a show Thursday? Just us doing the bowl games, or is this good enough?
No, I think we got at least one more podcast in us, but who knows if it's going to be about the bowl games. Maybe it'll be about something slightly different.
We'll see. We might do another show again this week. We'll crank out. This will be our third show of the week in the past 7 days, so Look forward to that. We may have another show again, so it could be an actual preview of just me and Chris talking about the three games. But thanks for listening to us this week. Find us on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, SoundCloud, MWCConnection.com, and everybody have a great start to your bowl week.